We're exploring the work of a nonprofit that aims to improve the lives of people with criminal records and bring dignity and compassion into reentry services. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Shannon Ross founded a nonprofit called The Community in 2014 while he was in prison serving out a 17-year sentence for reckless homicide. He was released in September last year and devotes his life to reentry services and efforts to reform the criminal legal system. And his newsletter that he started while in prison has grown to be a widely read anti-mass incarceration publication. And he started a podcast as well. It's called All in Wisconsin. What is your experience in the system? Did your loved one have a support network and resources for reentry? What would have helped? It's 800-642-1234. Shannon Ross, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, introduce us to first the Correcting the Narrative Awards that are set for Wednesday. What is your intention with this new event?
So the intention is to create a, I guess not a new way, but a way we focus on the stories of individuals that are system impacted that amplify the unrecognized success stories. In so many areas of life, we will award individuals who have more charisma, who more renown, who run organizations, who have some popularity. And I think that's to the detriment to a lot of the success stories that would resonate with a person who, in this case, is incarcerated, who's not going to come out and run an organization, who's not going to come out and be on camera. They're going to get a job, they're going to have a family and just quietly go about life, deal with the ups and downs of that, and just, you know, not go back to prison. So that success is the one that I feel we don't do a great job of amplifying as much, and hoping from this to create a, I guess a model or a template that we can start to do across the country, not just locally, across the state even, you know, not just here. I don't even mind if we never do it again. If somebody else, other organizations take the mantle and start doing it better, that have more money than us, that'd be fine. As long as these stories are told in a way that those inside can see examples that resonate with what they see their future as, and they feel encouraged and kind of just, you know, better about their own journey and their own desires as success stories as well.
In your own journey, you have faced stigma too in terms of reentry and taking your, you know, your time in prison with you afterward. How is that stigma? How does that affect people who have served a sentence?
So it affects people because when you don't have a belief that you can achieve certain things, you don't have a belief that people will see you as human being or that they will give you opportunities that they give other people, you don't even pursue them. So you right away give up. So the easiest way to not take advantage of an opportunity is to not think it's available to you. Even if you see it right in front of you, if you don't think you can fit through that door, if you don't think you can strong enough to open the door, whatever it may be, whatever analogy you could use there, you're not even going to ever get to the other side. So that is the precursor to a lot of the issues that occur with people when they come out, is that lack of self-esteem and that stigma, because it tells them that before they even try, to not even try. And when they can see people that have done it, that are from the same background, that are system impacted, that are formerly incarcerated, achieving things in so many different realms, it allows them to feel, okay, I can do that to them. There's a blueprint out there. Somebody else has done it. Not only am I not doing this completely brand new, but somebody in my position can achieve this.
But they have to hear those stories in order to believe in themselves. They have to see that someone else has done this. Someone else has made it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, you know, different levels to it. It's just like anything that you take in as education or new message or a lesson. When you hear about it, you know, that works for some people. But seeing it and hearing about it and experiencing it one-on-one with a person, talking to them, like all these things make that message even stronger. And the outcome of all this is not just making people that have committed crimes feel better. It's not that at all. It's about community building. It's about strengthening society, because these are individuals that are coming back to society. 95% of people in prison across the country, not just Wisconsin. And this is a number that's been found and has been, you know, agreed upon by various studies. for a very long time, I would say decades, 95% is the rough estimate of how many people that go to prison eventually come back to society. So they're coming back, and there's a large investment financially and resource-wise that society has put into each person. Wouldn't you want a good return on an investment? So these are just concrete measures to have people coming back better, able to be citizens, able to be parents and employees, able to be neighbors and potential partners in, you know, the family or the dating world. And so having them come back strong and prepared is to the betterment of everyone out here, not just these people that committed crimes, if that's the view that a lot of people like to look at it as.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Shannon Ross, who heads The Community. It's a nonprofit. It's based out of Milwaukee, organizer of the Correcting the Narrative Awards, first ever. You can join in. What can Wisconsin do to help formerly incarcerated people with their lives after release? Do you think the current reentry services are working? Join in at 800-642-1234. Shannon, Tamara Oman is the statewide director for the Free Campaign, focusing on women who have been incarcerated, and the host of your ceremony. What will she bring to the awards?
Tamara is the embodiment of strength and grace. She has a long, long history in this work of just really getting into the dirty aspects of it, the deep inner work that has to happen for anybody. Again, that self-esteem piece is what I'll come back to time and time again. Before anything that a person does in this world, they have to take care of home first. You know, you can have success without really having a good grasp of yourself and your emotional IQ, but it won't be internal, it won't be sustainable. Something will come apart at the seams eventually because the foundation is not there. And so Tamara has been doing that work for a very, very long time. And having her up there, you know, with her experience and her background and her ability to connect with people is just, I think it's going to be fantastic. For those that have not encountered her, I'm very excited to see them, you know, their reaction to meeting her, and just not even in person, just meeting her on stage up there. So yeah, she, I couldn't think of a better person to be the host of an event like this, with telling stories and understanding the complexity of those that have gone through the system and those that have been survivors of crime. Cause she's very, very attuned on both sides and connected very well on both sides. As is most the case, usually people that are incarcerated, they have been victimized. So, you know, there's a balance there where you can't just suddenly go from being a victim to being an evil villain. You know, you're a mix. It's a variety of things where you have the good with the bad, and going forward with an understanding and an awareness and embrace of that complexity in individuals that are system impacted beyond just the act or the label, but an entire background of experiences. And Tamara embodies that, and she will just do a wonderful job of addressing the crowd with the importance of what we're trying to show.
Well, let's explore that label and the complexities there, because you are open to talking about why you were incarcerated. And there's a caveat, and you say the question is a way for people to compare your crimes to the crimes of others. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, there's a carve-out mentality. So what has kind of happened over time is we've gone from a fear-based narrative to people that are criminal records, people incarcerated, fear, danger, to there's been more of a pity narrative it's gotten to. Reentry and criminal justice reform have on what I call high heels and a tight dress in society at the last couple, you know, maybe year or so. And that's just basically another way of saying that it's a sexy topic. But it won't necessarily be like that going forward. You know, there's a history of this issue being turned into a political propaganda piece and people going against it. So while it is popular, we can do a lot to take advantage of it in a healthy way to get society to look at the issue in a very honest and progressive, and by progressive, I mean moving forward light. And so when we talk about the issue of individuals that have criminal records, so many people cannot contextualize what that means. They don't have an experience with someone that has a criminal record, or they don't have one that is positive, or have a very deep understanding of what's behind that and what can be achieved by a person when they're in prison to come out. As I strongly believe and say oftentimes, better than people coming out of university settings when the environment is correct inside. And so when a person that doesn't understand what that means to have that label, finds out you have a criminal record, their next question is, okay, well, what were you in for? Because they'll maybe be willing to extend to you humanity and give you a second chance, or not see you as the general bias that the narrative and the media oftentimes portrays of that label. But you have to have certain types of crimes. You know, if you did, you just had a drug addiction, or if you maybe had just burglarized some houses or something, then you'll be okay. But then it gets into, you know, the just an extension of the issue is still separating, just not separating as much as you had before. Just to get past that, the entire point is that I committed a crime. I committed a violent crime. You know, I will own that part of my story because that's a very significant part of my story. A young man committing a very violent crime. There's a lot of those. Human beings commit violent crimes. That's the bottom of the story that we need to build upon. And so when we start to go from, okay, what were you in prison for? If you don't know how to contextualize that, I don't want to even feed into it. I want you just to see me as one of everyone that committed a crime, that was in prison. I am no different than any other person that was in, that will be in, and that has been in, because that's the story. And so from that story of person, human being in front of you, committed a crime, in my case, a violent crime. For some people, it's a crime of a sexual nature. Don't separate that. Don't carve out. Just see the fact that committed a crime and now moving forward. Who am I now? Who am I in front of you and going forward with this work and with my life? And somebody who's trying to create, you know, a better world. The interesting part about it is that when a person asks that, what they're really asking is, are you someone that I can trust? Are you someone that I can have around my family or my community? Can I embrace you back? Are you different? That's what you're really asking. And so when you say things like, what was your crime? And how do you feel about your crime? Are you remorseful about it? You're encouraging me to be a con man, because I can tell you anything. A person can sit here and basically have their parole hearings with every new person they meet and try and say what they think is best because you want to hear that. And that gets the reaction that they want out of you. But the reality is that all you can do, you can't cheat coming to an understanding of who I am as a human being. You have to do the same thing that you do with everybody else in your life and that everybody does to you, which is see what your work is, see what your walk is, see the people that are around you, and take from that, glean from that who you are as a human being now. So it's just really a cheat to get to an answer that you're not going to get to with that question.
Well, let's
to get to that answer you want, look at who I am. And so, and don't worry about what I was in for, because that really is very irrelevant to what I am now and who I am going forward.
Shannon Ross, executive director of the community founded while serving a prison sentence, focusing on connecting with people to reenter society successfully and treating people who have criminal records with dignity and humanity. What support services were absent when your loved one completed their sentence? What did they do? How hard was this time? And what did you do to say? What did you do to help? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the criminal justice system in Wisconsin and efforts to improve reentry with dignity. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the State Department of Corrections census from Friday, more than 20,000 people are incarcerated in state prisons. The nonprofit Prison Policy Initiative gave our state a failing grade for its response to COVID in prisons, noting as of the summer, adult correctional facilities were operating at 113% capacity. What does criminal justice reform mean to you? What does it look like? What is your story about the system? Join in 800-642-1234. Shannon Ross founded the nonprofit The Community and is with us for the hour. Shannon, you served out the end of your sentence in a pandemic. What was that like? What did you experience?
It was when I was explaining this to someone else, it was basically you take prison is a microcosm of society. It's just lower quality everything. You have the same gossip, you have the same human interaction, you have the same pains and ups and downs. A lot of people don't know there's laughter and joy in prison. A lot of it's cover-ups, but there's also very genuine experiences of joy and you know, human bonding and so forth. And so when COVID happened, it's like there was a prison inside the prison. It was almost like everybody was in the hole because everything was limited. You couldn't speak to loved ones before, like visits were canceled. And you couldn't go to rec. There were times when we had to stay in the room. And I was fortunate to get out of the DOC before the COVID wave hit Wisconsin. Some states hit COVID hit some correctional systems and the federal system pretty early on, I'd say midsummer of last year. But in Wisconsin, it was around October. Mm-hmm. So October, November is when it's really started to hit different facilities. So I didn't actually catch it. I wasn't there when anybody really caught it. Only a total of probably 25, 30 people throughout the entire system at that time when I left it caught it. But I experienced the protocols. I experienced the way that it operated with the changes and the lockdowns and, you know, limited movement and so forth. So that was the biggest thing. It was just taking a very traumatic experience in prison and amplifying it and limiting all the areas that allow a person to have a connection with society and with their own, you know, progress and their programs that they're taking. Everything just delayed and you know, made worse in that respect.
How much information could you get inside prison on masking, on social distancing, on the threat of COVID spread, you know, in a place where people are very tightly, you know, together? What was information like?
So in a one sense, we had it better than society. In another sense, we had it worse. The sense we had it worse was that we had limited media, of course. We had whatever was on the main media, newscasts, Good Morning America, the local stations, CBS, whatever, you know, the main stations, news sources would be. And then what we were hearing from our loved ones and the guards. So that's a downside because the guards, I don't want to say by and large, but there was a lot of anti-COVID, anti-vaccine, at the time the vaccine hadn't come out, but I know the extension of it. We've heard reports from guards and from people that are readers inside talking about what guards are saying. And it's very identical to what I saw when I was in there, just people who didn't think COVID existed at first. And so you would have those sources of media, the guards, loved ones, and the main media that we were getting. And that's all we relied on. We weren't able to really search on our own. Some people had loved ones. They could have them send various things. Some people had doctors that could ask for stuff. But, you know, there are doctors that have different views about it as well. So, you know, no one was able to really know just based on what they were hearing is all they could do. So that's where there was the good and the bad. The good was that we didn't necessarily have as many things to go chasing off online to say this is true, that's true. But we didn't have as much to find out on our own. Inside. So there were news sources, but not as much autonomy to find other things and investigate like there is in society.
We're talking with Shannon Ross, executive director of a nonprofit in Milwaukee focusing on successful reentry into society, has a newsletter, reaches thousands of people in the prison system. You can join in 800-642-1234. Shannon, how helpful has your newsletter been for these pandemic times for reaching people who are incarcerated and sharing information on the pandemic?
I would like to say it's been very helpful. I can never say being on the other side of it, how helpful it's been. We have had a lot of testimonials from people saying it's been helpful. Just in general, I feel comfortable saying we're the most credible messenger in the system, because if you want to get news into the DOC and the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, the facilities, you have the DOC first, because they have ultimate control. They can post memos whenever they want to at any facility. But then you have us. So if the DOC is not being as cooperative as you feel with the news you're trying to share, or they're, you know, taking longer, as happens in a bureaucracy where they have a lot of levels to pass before the news gets involved, we're the best option after that. And so just that ability to get information to people really, you know, within a short amount of time with our email process we have to getting connections to them, that alone, I think, has been a significant advantage to helping them, is getting them news. And we've covered the vaccine. We've covered COVID. We've definitely taken a stance of not being one way or the other. I think we lean towards encouraging people to at least really challenge themselves on the significance and the existence of COVID and what the vaccine can do. And so we did a video recently with Medical College of Wisconsin that is looking like it's going to be getting used for those coming out and being used in the prison system, that has two formerly incarcerated people who work in the community talking about the vaccine, three doctors talking about the vaccine, doctors that work for people that come out in the reentry healthcare community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had a COVID vaccine issue that we did. It was sent out to all of our readers inside. It was a physical issue that we did with Curdo Institute at Marquette and the Medical College of Wisconsin and the Yale Siege Center. And we just gave them a lot of insight about the vaccine and FAQs and some information from the one of the African-American doctors that was behind the design of it and the creation of the vaccine. And so I think we've been pretty, you know, successful at helping people feel comfortable about the decisions they made or finding out more information from a trusted, credible messenger, that as is what we are.
Shannon Ross, founder of The Community in 2014, built support systems for people transitioning out of prison, talking about the newsletter. Are you incarcerated? Do you get The Community newsletter? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the successful transition from prison, creating a reentry system that values human dignity and humanity. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. People who have been incarcerated face major challenges finding work after release. According to a multi-year study by Brookings published in 2018, about 55% of formerly incarcerated Americans reported income a year after release. What employment barriers did your loved one face in reentry? How did they get their life on track? What programs made all the difference, and who runs them? Join in at 800-642-1234. Shannon Ross is executive director of The Community, advocating for systemic change and rooting out stigma, with us for the hour. Shannon, we heard from Kenneth in Janesville, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Kenneth read about a company in California that only hires formerly incarcerated people and wants to know how prevalent are programs like this in Wisconsin. Is it difficult for people with criminal records to get a job after being released?
So I can't think of any that hire exclusively people with criminal records. I know our trucking company, we definitely try to hire system impacted individuals first and foremost, but it's not like a requirement. There are, I would say, a number of companies like that though across the country. There's a good book by Jeffrey Korzenick called Untapped Talent, I believe the name of it is. And it's been out for maybe several months, and he just makes the business case for hiring people that have criminal records and the importance of it on the economy and for companies in hiring from that demographic, because he's laying out how there are very, very effective programs that have hired from that demographic and have, you know, achieved great success with that. Just having to understand what that means and doing certain things differently. I think maybe Dave's Killer Bread might be one of the ones that he was mentioning in California. I think it's the gentleman in Janesville. So the issues are real when people come out of getting a job. There are a lot more people willing to hire you right now than there have been for a long time. Again, it's a popular issue. And so a lot of companies are signing on. There's a second chance hiring coalition of Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. There's a lot of interest even in Milwaukee hiring from that group. Just knowing how to do it, I think, is very important. Don't just jump in and say, hey, we're going to hire people that are formerly incarcerated, and then when it doesn't work out, think it's the people that are formerly incarcerated. It's a specific way you have to do it. You have to be sensitive to certain things and be aware of what that means to take it, you know, get the best from these individuals, and so they get the best out of the experience as well. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. When you come from a place where you're not getting great training, you're not getting the belief that you can actually move forward or you can do certain things, or you've been sitting there stagnant in prison for years, you know, you're going to come out and struggle to get a job, and people are going to not see you as somebody they want to hire because you have a certain attitude or lack of, you know, etiquette in dealing with problems very well with people. And so that all is a testament to the way we deal with individuals when they're in prison and how they come out oftentimes worse off, but they could come out again better than people coming out of university settings if we do it correctly.
Let's bring in Jim now in Juneau. Jim, hi. What is your story?
Thanks for this topic. So I served 14 years in the Virginia penitentiary system. it is very hard on a person mentally coming out of a warehouse, because that's what it is. This way our system is set up, it is not set up for you to have the ability to get your life in order upon, right upon release. You absolutely need some kind of family support for your mental side of it, but for being able to actually get out and be a, you know, functioning member in society, they need to start making a system where before you get released, you have the ability to have a job so that you are able to get that 9-to-5 mentality and practice, you know, what it takes to do the things you're going to need to do when you get out. I personally feel that if you're going to do a system where your time is, you know, given to you, you know, 85%, let's put it that way, no good time to speak of, I think that they should make a good time allowance based upon the time you give in a work setting in the penitentiary system. Hmm. And so that a person earns their good time and also learns how to function,
build
in
skills
as they get out.
Let's allow Shannon to build on your experience, Jim. Shannon, your insights.
Yeah, no, he's 100% right. The situation as it is right now inside is massively warehoused. And the DOC will even say that at times. They will say when it comes to things that are in the area of rehabilitation, that some things are not their job, because their job is security. Their job is to keep you there, make sure that, you know, you're safe while you're there and that society's safe, and then you just come out. You know, the system is, we separate people. We take a crime, we say you were the perpetrator, you were the crime survivor, and I'll go to your corners, and then in 10 years, maybe meet again on a street, you know, accidentally, you know, when the one person gets out. So that doesn't get us anywhere, because that's not accountability. I was having a conversation with somebody recently about, he was asking, people would think when you go to prison, you know, you should be punished. I'm like, yeah, well, punishment doesn't get you anywhere. What we really want is, we want accountability. We don't want punishment. Accountability gets both that sense of the depth and the, you know, the gravity of the situation into a person's understanding. It also makes the person on the side that was victimized feel that you understand what happened and that you have, you know, suffered the heaviness of that in some way, but it moves both parties forward. And so having a situation where individuals are getting an understanding of what they can do when they get out, opportunities to do things before they get out to prepare, that is key. Because when you just are dropped off in the middle of a jungle, which happens a lot of times for people coming out of prison for years where they were just warehoused, then it doesn't get society anywhere. It doesn't help us get anywhere. It's penny wise and pound foolish. Sounds good. Feels good to say we punished people, got what you deserved. But now when that problem comes to your doorstep in some fashion, because your daughter encountered this individual who did not get what they could have gotten while they were incarcerated, and now this person is again victimizing people because they didn't get what they could have gotten to become whole in some sense and have an understanding of what it means to have victimized somebody and done wrong and why you need to atone for that or even be held accountable, then it just continues this cycle. So again, this is not about, and I always like to bring this back, it's not about coddling people. It's not about making excuses for people or giving individuals that have done society wrong things that those in society don't even have, like an opportunity at getting a college degree or a vocational skill. It's about focusing on outcomes. What are the outcomes of the current process we have? Are they getting us closer to what we want as a society, healthy communities, less crime, or do they just sound good? They just feel good to say, and it doesn't. Like, you know, as he said, it's just warehousing, and we can do a lot better job than warehousing.
We're talking with Shannon Ross, who's executive director of the community in Milwaukee, and your insights on reentry at 800-642-1234. Shannon, a number of criminal justice reforms were removed from the state budget earlier this year by Republican lawmakers who said the reforms should be done through legislation. What changes legislatively should be made into law? What should the governor sign into law that would make sustainable reforms to help stop mass incarceration in Wisconsin?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I some of this I have to kind of bite my tongue on because I have some strong opinions about the way things have been handled. I think there are some very clear-cut things that can be done that don't even require legislation. I feel that there are areas where Evers especially could, you know, take advantage of powers he has to make certain things occur. He's really bent on having bipartisan support for things, which is laudable. I understand that. But there are areas where it's very clear something needs to be done, and it should just, you know, be a let's just get it in place because the other side is going to play politics situation. And so there are complexities to this that I don't fully understand. I'm trying to learn more about and be patient about understanding, accepting my naivety in certain areas. But what, you know, can be done at the base level is addressing the amount of people that go back to prison for crimeless revocations. It's not that simple. I will state very clearly that just to say that soundbite, it's definitely more to it than that soundbite. But there's a lot of improvement we can make on having people go back to prison for what are just rule violations. They're not actual crimes. People being sent back because, for example, they did not show up late to a variety of appointments with their agent, or they didn't get a job in time, or they didn't tell their agent they had a change of address. Things like that are rule violations, and there's different varieties. And you can be sent back to prison in Wisconsin just on an allegation, just simply somebody says you did something, you're never found guilty of it, but there's a lower bar to being incarcerated when you are on paper than there is if you are a regular citizen who has the due process and beyond a reasonable doubt status, which has to be achieved. So that's one clear one I think that can happen. Another one that I'm very big on with our work is pre-entry, which is really changing the environment inside the prison system. This takes no legislative action. It takes little to no increase in funding. We can just restructure the way that we are incentivizing people inside to spend their time, encouraging them to and rewarding them in various ways through lower, little things like you get more phone calls, you get maybe cable TV in one area, you get less rules that you have to follow, like wearing your lanyard or having to sign out. You have more freedoms all your side. So little things like that can be a huge motivation for those inside to pursue things that are along with their personal development, their educational attainment in various ways, and, you know, allowing them to have agency in the way that they develop, but having that space and that time instead of the chaos of a dorm setting or having a cellie that they have to live with and dealing with that. I've personally had to quit a tutor job before because I was living with somebody they would not move me out of the room from because he was just, it was chaotic in there. So I had to take a job somewhere else just to get out of that setting in food service. Stop being a tutor, you know, like that shouldn't have to happen. So we can do a lot better job while people are inside of incentivizing them to do things that are beneficial for their own personal development. And then again, better for the community in the end because of that. So those are the two that I think are really easy is addressing crimeless revocations, addressing the prison environment. And then we should also be able to vote. If you get out of prison, there's no reason why you can't vote. I'm back in society. I'm paying taxes. A number of other states allow you to vote when you get out. Some states allow you to vote while you're incarcerated still. We should in Wisconsin be able to vote once I get out. I am a returned citizen. So I should have the rights of a returned citizen in that fashion to vote for who is, all around me making these legislative decisions.
We're talking with Shannon Ross, heads up the nonprofit The Community, spent 17 years in prison in Wisconsin. After being released last year, he's continuing his work of expanding resources for incarcerated Wisconsinites and pushing for anti-mass incarceration initiatives. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Shannon Ross here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Shannon Ross. Started a nonprofit in 2014 while serving a sentence to advocate for better treatment and for reentry for incarcerated Wisconsinites. His newsletter, read by thousands of people, and his new podcast, it's called All in Wisconsin. Shannon with us for about 8 more minutes. On the issues of pre-reentry, Gwen in Madison would like to explore that. Gwen, go ahead.
Hi. So I'm just curious why we can't figure out, like, how to, I guess, generate resources at the same time that we're getting people ready. So, for example, we know there's a lot of jobs needed in manufacturing. So if there's some way to have prisoners have a job, you know, while they're incarcerated being manufacturers, and then give them a paycheck and have them pay for their care, and, you know, just programs like that where they're actually, you know, getting real pay, but also paying for actual expenses that they have. And that would get both work skills and life skills.
Shannon Ross, can you elaborate on that type of program?
Yeah, so that is the work release program. In Wisconsin, there are about 13 facilities. Two of them are women's facilities throughout the state where people can get jobs prior to release. You can go to a work release facility technically at any time in your incarceration, but generally it's about when you're under 3 years or so. It depends on your comportment record while you're incarcerated and a variety of other things, if you've done your programs. But people go there and they are allowed to get a job where they pay up to $720 a month, maybe $740 a month, I'm sorry. And that's for room and board and transportation to and from the job. It's a very restrictive process. You can't even talk to your coworkers really about anything personal. You're supposed to just be basically a robot going to work. The work release process is good. It's very good. Some states don't even have it, but at the same time, they don't want you to really be a human being. They're just basically saying, go make money, but don't make, some development or a future for yourself. Because when you're going to work, even at a factory, and you can't even talk to your coworkers in a way that is about your life and about their life and really get to know them, you can't eat shared food that people bring to work. You can't even look at a video on a cell phone somebody has because you can't have any of this. You can't touch money. Whereas on Huber, work release for jail, they can do all those things. They have a lot more autonomy. And I personally feel, without knowing the data, I feel like that's a very, very much more successful program because it has less people going back and getting in trouble at the job and losing their job just because they, for example, ate a chip out of somebody's bag that was at work. It's a coworker, which could be a reason to lose your job. So they do have that process. It just has, you know, not without flaws. I've personally been a part of it. I've had a job in Fort Atkinson at a cat food factory before I got out. And I was looking for a job in Milwaukee before I got out. Only two facilities allow you the flexibility to find your own job, which I think is an important part of this. If you're going to a place and they only have set contracts that you can go to this, or this, or take it or leave it, that doesn't really help you because, as was my case, I actually quit the job I had because I had it for 5 weeks and it was just not at all what I was trying to do. I felt I could invest more in my own time and myself in the room, in writing and in focusing on studying than spending 10 hours a day at a factory, which I was not going to do when I got out. So if I would have had the ability to find something in line with what I was going to be doing, when I was in Milwaukee, Keith Stanley, who runs Near Wyside Partners, was trying to find an internship position for me and they were going to let me do that in Milwaukee. So just the flexibility to have that, finding a job that aligns with what you're going to be doing and what your goals are, I think is an important part of what you were talking about, which is overall a very good program. Having work release and having people have the ability to have something before they get out, not right before, but for, you know, ideally a couple of years before where you're in the workforce, making money.
Having that runway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Gwen, thank you for the call. We heard from Jeff in Madison, who called in, couldn't stay, and knows volunteers from a program called Jail Guitar Doors. And it's a program that offers free musical instruments to people who are incarcerated. Jeff wants to know, does this program exist here in Wisconsin? And how can people volunteer in the state prison system? What roles do volunteers play?
I have never heard of that. And I would definitely like to learn more. I'd like to know about every resource for those inside so we can let them know. As far as volunteering right now in the prison system, you have to get approved by whatever facility you're going to be volunteering at. They just opened up volunteering again because everything was closed for COVID for a while. So you can reach out to us. We can connect you with, you know, people at probably any facility who are doing certain things. We don't know everything, but well, we can connect you to somebody that'll be able to find out what's going on or the direct person at that facility who can tell you what groups are currently in there. But even if something's not at a facility, you can create a new group. You can create a new program that would go in and try and get permission to take that in and connect with the individuals at that facility. So there's a mix of finding what's going on now and connecting with that or creating something new like that prison guitar program and bringing it to Wisconsin. So there's definitely about a lot of opportunities. And then even without going in, there's a lot of stuff with correspondence, with pen pal, with finding resources, people inside and helping them. So there's no end of ways to connect with people inside and help out that align with your values, interests, and resources if you're looking for it.
In terms of communications, how have phone calls been in the prison system? We've been doing conversations about just the astronomical cost to make a call.
Yeah, it's gotten cheaper over time. There's been a lot of legislation federally and even within the state, not legislation, but just change. It's about 6 cents a minute right now in Wisconsin, and we're one of the better in the country. Connecticut just went to entirely free phone calls, emails, and video visits. That's the model that I believe everybody should be striving for, since that precedent has been set. And various jails and jurisdictions around the country have gone to free as well. So we're actually right now trying to get Milwaukee County to do that with Bianca Tylik and Worth Rises. They're an organization behind a lot of that legislation, a lot of the change, the experts in that field. So it's overall, it's cheaper than it is in other states. It's not terrible here relatively, but definitely should be better than it is and can be better than it is with more access, because that's an important part of rehabilitation, is having that connection with your loved ones, your family, your children, your support network.
Shannon Ross, earlier this year, one of our listeners named Mitch requested more conversations with formerly incarcerated people. And Mitch asked to hear a different point of view than the State Department of Corrections. What is most needed to correct the narrative surrounding people with criminal records?
I would say one is the media. I know somebody asked one time, and there was a group of us, and somebody said, if you had all the money in the world, what would you do? And I was the only one that said I'd take over the media, because I think that is what is at the root of the issue. If you can get people to see those out of criminal records as human beings, you can change all this stuff that is currently finding immense restrictions and obstructions to getting approval in the legislature or in communities, because that's the base point of it, is that the reason that you don't hire somebody that's criminal record is because you don't see them as human being, or you have a sense of fear or danger that's not really accurate with what that demographic presents. You're basing it off of the media, off of stories you've seen, off of, aggrandized stories of individuals inside and violence and coming out and just continuing to be worse criminals, learning to be better criminals, all these tropes that we hear. But if the media were to present people that have criminal records differently, they were to present that demographic in a way that is more aligned with the successes, humanity, and agency of that demographic, then you'd have people who start to give them more opportunities. You'd have people who start to vote differently. You'd have legislators who feel better about voting in favor of things because their constituents aren't going to get on them about having voted for some kind of reform that can be seen as coddling criminals or, pro or soft on crime. You know, these labels that get us nowhere, that have no accuracy. They just sound bites. So
Shannon,
that is at the end of it, I think, what is behind it all, and that I would like to focus on if I could and I had all the power and money, is the media. Really get them to tell these stories differently, because the way we tell stories matters significantly.
Shannon Ross, thank you for joining us. Shannon Ross, Executive Director of the Community, founded while serving a 17-year prison sentence. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.